Claire Cronin, you are the Executive Marketing Director at McLaren, and I'm most grateful for your time in speaking with us as we talk with one another on this very hot day in June. I wanted to talk to you about your experience of the last 12 months or so during the lockdowns and the pandemic and this crazy year for everyone, because you've had a very busy time yourself. You, I understand, left Virgin Atlantic as their head of marketing, CMO, a business that has done phenomenally well, and of course, with huge headwinds of the last year or so. I think you joined McLaren about 3 months ago or so as the executive director of marketing. And I suspect a lot's gone on between then. First of all, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be chatting with you. And I'm relieved it's over a podcast, so you can't see the horrendous sunburn I'm sporting. Like every Brit, I just dashed out there the second the sun arrived. And now I look rather like a burnt sausage.
Well, me too. I keep telling my wife it's the only way we can teach our children how foolish it looks to not wear suntan lotion in this weather. But thanks for joining us, Claire. So you have had a busy year or so. Tell us a little bit more. You left Virgin when?
I left Virgin at the end of August, so I was due to have a baby on the 14th of September. I can be so precise because it was a C-section, so it was very highly scheduled, and it was just a bonkers year. So, I mean, I don't think any industry has been more affected by the pandemic than aviation and tourism. And so, as a business, it was the most transformative year that I've ever had in my career, and frankly, the most depressing. So, you know, we had to reduce our workforce by half. We had to pivot the entire passenger business into providing cargo services and shipping PPE equipment across the world. And we were running with a skeleton staff of just 10% of our workforce because we literally couldn't afford to pay the wages of the other 90%. So it was a really turbulent, really stressful time in the industry. And a year when we saw brilliant teamwork and the real camaraderie and spirit of Virgin come to the forefront. But it was sort of doubly challenging for me because in March of last year, Boris Johnson made an announcement that if you were pregnant, you needed to shield and work from home. And I was newly pregnant, but none of my colleagues knew this. And so when I was sort of sent home, about a week passed and I started to get bombarded with emails from people saying, are you okay, Claire? When people thought I had COVID, and I had to say, no, I'm quite healthy. But by the way, yes, I'm pregnant and I'm due in September. So that's why you won't be seeing me in the office for the foreseeable future. And so I actually worked from home from March right the way through to my pregnancy and right the way through to the end of August, and have spent a phenomenal amount of time at home, and then obviously started my maternity leave straight away.
Gosh, I was going to ask you what your biggest challenge of the last year or so. I suspect there are a few, but just working from home for such a long period of time and having to manage communications with all the important avenues that you had to manage communications with in itself must have been challenging. But what else? What else was challenging of the last year to you going through that much flux and change?
I mean, I actually, because we moved out of London, so we got a house in the country. I was pregnant working from home. And then I did my maternity leave in this new area, which because we went into another lockdown over the winter, I couldn't meet with any new mums in the area. I couldn't even meet with my own family and friends because of the lockdown restrictions. So to be honest, the biggest challenge for me was just the sheer loneliness of being at home, really feeling trapped with a newborn. It was my first child, my one and only child. And I mean, she's an absolute poppet, but I had no idea what I was doing. And, you know, all of the tools and the skills you have as a woman in the workplace are frankly no use to you with a newborn that, you know, can't sleep, is struggling to feed and all the rest of it. So I just found it really lonely. And I'm not someone who really enjoys jumping on Zoom calls and having catch-up drinks with people. I realize I'm much more of a face-to-face person, and I really rely on the energy you get from other people and just the change of scene you get that kind of gives you a zest for life. And so the more time I spent at home, the more lethargic I became. And so when McLaren sort of rang me and said, oh, you know, would you like to have a pre-chat with any of your new team before you start so you can hit the ground running? I literally bit their hand off and said, yeah, I'd love to come to the office. I'll do anything you want. I just actually need desperately to get going now. So I couldn't wait to start in my new job. And I think partly also coming out of one job that was in wind down mode and, you know, laying off a lot of staff and really having to, you know, fight to just continue trading. It was then a real joy to come in a business that was on a real upward trajectory. So, you know, I now work for the McLaren Racing team, and the momentum and the positive positive growth in that business is phenomenal. So I've gone from having offsites where we're looking at how we cut the number of roles we have in the business to an offsite that I hosted last week about how many roles we need to grow because we're entering new motor series and we need to expand the size of the team.
This McLaren Racing time or business that you've joined is of course, at an extremely exciting time. I know Lando is doing great things, in particular at the moment. Tell me a bit about it. How did it come about? Because we headhunters play a role in the ecosystem. How did you learn about this role?
So it was a real odd one, actually. So I just got a call out of the blue last summer from the current chief commercial officer, Mark Waller. And he and I used to work together in his old capacity when he was at the NFL, because Virgin Atlantic actually fly a lot of the NFL players to their London games. And so in the course of meeting him through that interaction, we'd obviously established a bit of a relationship. And so he phoned me up in late summer, it would have been around July time, and said that he was looking to find a successor for his chief commercial officer role. And so he asked me if I'd be interested in being part of that process. I sort of angled the phone down and said, well, there's two things you need to know. It's been a long time since we've seen each other. Number one, I'm heavily pregnant and I'm due in September. And number two, I don't know a thing about motor series. And at that point, Mark just sort of laughed and said, well, it's not a problem that you're pregnant. We're actually actively trying to get more women, more people into the organization to really increase the diversity of our company because we want it to reflect our fan base. So that's not a problem. And number two, the fact that you're not a fan of Formula One and you don't follow it right now is actually good for us because we want to attract more people like you into the sport. And so having a bit more corporate objectivity would be helpful. So, you know, on that basis, if you're not bothered about being pregnant and coming for an interview, we certainly aren't. And we'd love to see you. Right. So that was basically how it came about. And so I decided I would wind up my time at Virgin, hand in my notice, and then spend the next 6 months of my notice period basically serving out my maternity so I could then go into this recruitment process. And sort of having had the conversation with Mark, I then went in to see Zach, their CEO, the week after. So it was about September 2nd. And within 24 hours, they rang me, offered me the job, and I had a signed contract 4 days later. As it was all sewn up before I actually went into hospital and had the baby. It was faster than an F1 race.
How extraordinary. Well, tell us a little bit about your remit, Claire, there. What does it mean to be executive director of marketing? And tell us what McLaren Racing looks like today through your lens.
So they created the role specifically for me so that I would have a transition role to enter the company in. So today the role looks after three things. It looks after our brand experiences, so everything we offer at the trackside for fans. It looks after our brand and creative, so the way the livery looks and all of our branded touch points and merchandise. And then it also looks after digital, so all of our content across social media. And we're very fortunate. We have an incredibly talented team here and the largest social media following of any Formula One team. And then the intention is that in the second half of the year, I will then expand my portfolio to also look after the partnerships team, the licensing team, and esports and gaming. So then I'll pick up the full chief commercial officer role in the second half of the year.
Gosh, okay, fantastic. Now, you've just had successes in the IndyCar world over in
the US. We have, yes, in Detroit.
And you tell us about your play in esports today. Is that a thing I should have known about? I should have researched a great depth? Where are you at in that journey?
So it's really a reflection of the fact that McLaren has been very forward-thinking as a brand. So we are the only brand that also has a race team in IndyCar. Just on Friday, we announced our intention to participate in Extreme E. And so we'll be the only Formula One team in all three motor series.
But for those that don't know about Extreme E, tell us, here's an opportunity to pitch it to the world.
Indeed. So here it is. So it's a race that takes part across five different locations across the world with sustainability at the very heart of it, and equality, diversity. So it's a race that is in which like 4x4 electric cars are used with a male and female team that drive the car. And they very deliberately choose locations to race where there is a big sustainability challenge and a climate challenge. So the first one that I'll be actually attending is the Greenland race on the weekend of August 28th, which I'm really excited by. So that's the kind of, it's the new electric play in racing. So super excited exciting, and we're really excited about it because we know that it's something that the younger consumers in particular are really passionate about, and we know it will help us to not just win customers but also win great talent to come work for us as a business.
Why do you think other Formula One teams are not present in this world?
I think because the sport as a whole is quite siloed, so they tend to look at their core motor series and then don't look beyond it. Within McLaren, we've always focused on not just the generation of fans that we're serving today, but where the future generation is coming from. And that's why we were one of the first teams to go into esports. We have the largest digital and social offering because we know that's where the future lies. And so for us, we look at the future years and know that our big opportunities to grow the audience are going to come from not just cracking the US, where motorsports is relatively small relative to all of their other sporting pursuits, but also looking at how we leverage the worlds of gaming and esports to actually attract that younger generation. And it's partly for us, you know, we've always had a policy of championing young talent. So Lewis Hamilton drove for us before he went off and achieved all the success he's enjoyed at Mercedes. And we currently have Lando, who's only 21. And he really is a massively passionate gamer and connects with a lot of his audience on the social channels like Discord and Twitch. So it's always been a core part of our DNA to be very innovative and on the front foot in acquiring and developing new audiences.
It sounds like you've got a huge brief that I suspect a lot of people listening to this will be very envious of, actually. And I sincerely congratulate you, because what an exciting time to be part of it, and how many different columns and categories that you're going to go after when you look every day at what you're meant to be achieving today for tomorrow. It's a biggie. When you look back over the last 12 months or so, in this challenging year for everyone, including those in your business today and those at Virgin Atlantic, are there any things that have amazed you, surprised you, or that have delighted you in terms of perhaps acts of kindness or examples where people have gone the extra mile to support one another?
I mean, there's a ton of examples, and I feel like it's, you know, coming off the back of this extraordinary year, it just feels like every day in the press, there's something extraordinary or unprecedented being spoken about. But just over the weekend, one of my colleagues in the racing business was awarded an MBE. So Mark Matheson works in our racing division, and he was recognized for the extraordinary contribution he made to the UK response to creating more ventilators. So you'll probably recall reading about this in the press. Yeah, so around March of last year, there was sort of this story that we were going to run out of ventilators. And by trade, you know, he is somebody who actually works with external companies to apply the techniques and the practices of Formula One into industry and to improve supply chains and things like that. So he really spearheaded an initiative across McLaren, Formula One, various industries and the government to actually redevelop the process for designing and deploying ventilators. So they're not quite as complex as a Formula One car, but they're not far off. Each ventilator is comprised of 700 parts, and they weren't designed to be built at rapid scale. So to build one ventilator, you're having to coordinate parts coming in from 90 different suppliers. So a huge logistical challenge. And he spearheaded a team to re-engineer the entire sourcing and build process, which basically cut down production time from 23 years into 12 weeks. Gosh. I mean, just an absolutely mind-boggling achievement.
That is insane and fantastic, and that he got that recognition.
Yeah. And he's the first person to say, it's not me. It was a huge team effort. He's extraordinarily humble. But I just sort of looked at that and thought, wow, that is an amazing example of where somebody worked 22-hour days to deliver something for this country by putting together an amazing team of people, you know, airline pilots, F1 technicians, just an incredible array, and putting the smartest brains behind a very complex problem. Gosh, and what a phenomenal result.
Yeah, that would make an excellent book, actually.
It would. A far more interesting podcast than this one.
No, not at all. But good for him. Now, if I was to ask you perhaps a challenging question, it's this. What is the single most exciting thing that you're going after yourself this year, Claire, as you look at the next 12 months?
Ooh, as a personal thing, I would say the single most exciting thing for me is going after third place in the Constructors' Championship. So I've spent my entire career working in a corporate background where my biggest objective is chasing an EBITDA number or an NPS score. And it's just so exciting to be part of a business and a race team that is aspiring for something bigger that unifies the entire workforce behind it. So last year we finished third to our surprise, we admit, we were sort of hopeful we could achieve third, but we thought it was more likely we'd be fourth. So this year we're desperate to hold on to that third spot. And we're in a really ferocious fight with Ferrari to maintain it. And so honestly, I can't even begin to describe the excitement that you get in the office when you come in off the back of somebody winning a podium and the extra spring in your step, the velocity that it brings into the business is just extraordinary. So for me, the number one thing I'm excited about is actually helping our business get to that position.
God, how exciting. And how many people there? How many people under that roof?
Well, I mean, at the moment, we're very much practicing hybrid working and social distancing. So it's looking a little bit more sparse, but typically there's about 3,000 people here on the Woking campus.
Excellent. Well, listen, I better let you get on. Claire Cronin, thank you so much for sharing some of your experiences, insights and challenges. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for yours, Ru. Bye.